In this episode, we click into the topic of operationalizing AI capabilities. This is a thread in one of our current TSI industry research journeys. And today we will speak with Justin Kaywood, a seasoned technology professional who recently lived through the trials and tribulations of deploying AI within the operations of a sizable technology services provider. I am Thomas Law, the executive director of TSIA, and welcome to Tectonic, the podcast where we explore what makes technology business models successful in today's world. Let's get this insight engine humming. Welcome, Justin. It's great to have you on Tectonic here today.
Thank you, Thomas. Great to be here.
So we're going to click into this topic of AI because you spent several years rolling out some AI capabilities. And so let's start with, I think, two things. Number one, let's start with what your role was as you rolled these out. And then number two, what were some of the key AI capabilities you were working to roll out?
Yeah, sure. So the role was essentially leading a team who were responsible for the managed services platform for the company globally, right? So it started out being the essentials of managed services around IT service management, but it grew into a full ecosystem, you know, with integration hubs and monitoring and place to define the services and on and on. So that's kind of where the AI eventually became part of that evolution and journey.
Okay. What was the initial business case for the initiative and specific to invest in some of the AI capabilities? What was the opportunity that the company saw?
We were trying to get to the next level and look out to the future. And obviously, there's always a business desire to gain more efficiencies, right? That's just a given all the time. So efficiencies was part of the equation for sure. But there were other elements around the ability to differentiate, which in the MSP space is getting more and more competitive. Yeah. And the ability to get a little bit ahead and be able to articulate a new story, a new narrative around preventative predictions, higher levels of uptime is pretty key as well. And the flip side of that is not just the messaging, but the value to the customers, right? So existing customers, like taking them on a journey of moving away from the reactive into the proactive space and being able to give them much higher service levels. So that was really the driver there.
Let me click into both sides of that equation. So on the value proposition to the customer, again, having a better technical experience where you could have proactive support, which is going to result in less downtime, et cetera. Am I tracking that correctly?
Yep, exactly. And in fact, just pick up on that real quick, Thomas. One of the things that we talked about extensively in the team was how do we become more utility-like, utility company-like? Differing thoughts on this. Some of the guys were all about how do we provide more features in the customer portal. I was more in the camp where how do we make it so the customer never even wants to go to the portal?
So like what type of typical things would they be lobbying for? Just more knowledge content? What were the features that they like, hey, this is where we'd want to invest? Well, you were saying, hey, let's take that off the table so they don't have to worry about going.
Yeah. So things like calculating estimated carbon footprint. What is the estimated cost of the infrastructure that you have? All these additional insights, they're not bad in themselves. I was more in the camp of, you know, if you're liking it to the electricity company, the less you have to go there and interact with them, the better you know the service is running, right? You just want it to work. So, you know, the argument I was making was, let's make it so that the customers have truly not have to worry about the technology we're managing. They never have to really interact with us unless they want to. They want to change a service or ask something, that's fine. But the less they have to interact with us, to me, that's an indicator that we're doing a better job.
Yeah. So I'm going to go a little bit further down this rabbit trail because I'm hearing this a lot from member companies as they start to invest in AI capabilities, stand them up. One of the things is how do they position the value with customers? How do they have these conversations? Monetizing, are they just, is it part of the value prop? You know, this is all unfolding sort of real time, right? And, you know, when I think of the vision you just put on the table, which I can't disagree with, right? If you're providing core technology infrastructure, that's your value proposition. And the goal is it should just be running. Like you said, like electricity, I want to turn the lights on when I get up in the morning, and I do not want to have to call somebody and find out what's going on, right? So I get that value proposition, and I think it is the experience to aspire to. But over time, right, if the customer starts to get completely conditioned to that level of reliability, you start to forget what it was like before. You know, I'm sure in the evolution of electricity, there was a time when people's power went out twice a day, once a week, you know, and then companies got better and better with the infrastructure. And now we have this insane expectation. And when our bill goes up, we get pissed, right? We get mad,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, yeah.
Now, if this is just complete hypothetical, but related back to tech, but if the electricity company sent me, they said, hey, your bill's going up here, your hourly rate or whatever, but want you to know, here's all the things that we prevented this past quarter. Right. And who knows, it could be excess loads are coming on. We had that big heat wave we had to do. Like, here's all of the things that we did. And here was your, you know, availability level during that time. And here's investments we're making. So there's context. And I just wonder, because we have been getting better and better and better at just, you know, reliability in tech, you know, infrastructure. And it's going to get better and better and better with these tools to the point that the expectations are going to be super high. And I just wonder if we're going to have to create this feedback loop to customers to say, you know, we did all this preventative AI driven support model here. So we like got ahead of three outages you would have had in it. We weren't invested in these tools or you didn't have this service or whatever. Did you guys have any thoughts about that type of closed loop conversation with the customer over time?
Yeah, absolutely. So the kind of two angles to it. One is continuous communication about the enhancements that you're making in the environment, right? So continually telling the customers, hey, we're moving down this road with this technology and here's why and here's the benefits to you. So that continuous communication, I think, is key. Again, showing value, but also the portal did exist so they can go there at any time and see everything going on, right? All the monitoring happening, all the events and incidents and preventions as well. And that was a key thing, was getting access to the customers to show what we're doing to prevent what would have been incidents in the past. And then there's also, you know, quarterly reviews and things like that where you go through all the stats. So there's definitely still communication there to try and show value. And that was definitely something that was talked about as well. Like, hey, if we just make this noise free, they're going to think we're doing nothing.
That's exactly the thread I'm on, right? Is making sure there's good awareness there. To me, the analogy is, if you think about security, IT security firms, right? If they're providing both technology and services to customers, one of the things they're always going to talk about is, this is how many attacks we prevented right over this month. So the good news is you didn't have any problems, but that didn't happen, you know, without a lot of work going on behind the scenes. And so I think that visibility is important. I want to flip over to the efficiency side. So as you were looking at deploying these technologies, I think across multiple regions, right, is what were the efficiencies you expected to see in terms of your daily operations?
Yeah, I mean, the efficiencies we got, Thomas, were huge. I mean, when I say we had a 91% incident reduction, it's accurate, but there's a caveat there, right? Because what we did was, in the past, there would be one event, one monitoring event that would create one incident, like a one-to-one correlation there, right? And we'll give you a little bit more context here. I hope I don't get too complicated. Stop me if I do. Essentially, in the past, if there was five things happening in the environment, like a Windows server went down, some storage issues, some network issue, et cetera, those would be five different alarms to five different incidents assigned to five different people, right? And the reason for that is it's very difficult as an MSP to do correlation and root cause, because you don't have access to the full environment. Customer normally says, you know, you can manage these 100 devices, but they might have 2,000 in their estate, right? So you get a very limited view, and they don't want you having access to everything, right? So correlation root cause became very challenging, which is why it became very discrete like that. Well, in the AI world, the machine was able to do correlation, saying, I have X percent probability that these five things are related to each other.
Yep.
Right. And so it would group them onto one ticket. So our incident reduction was dramatically reduced, but you have to remember that there's now correlation happening onto an incident, right? To give people more context to what's going on so that you can be smarter about the resolution as well.
Let me play that back. I'm trying to hang. So let me play that. And again, MSP, for anybody who's not familiar with that world, managed service provider, you're in there, you are operating pieces of an environment for a customer. That's what they're paying you to do. And so something goes wrong in the old model, because there are multiple technologies involved. You would basically have to shoot out 5 different alarms to different experts to say, hey, there was a fault in the server area, laptop, or whatever it was, router, take a look at that, or you had to go hunt that down. Now, I'm going to hypothesize here, there's actually 2 steps on the roadmap. Right? The first step, which you just said, is before you send all that out, you're taking all that information in, or the AI is taking that information in, using pattern recognition and saying, oh, I think I know what the problem is here. So instead of sending bluntly out, it's a blunt instrument, 5 alarms, they're maybe sending 1 alarm to what they believe is the person who can resolve it. Is that an accurate playback?
Yeah, essentially correct. There's a little bit more to it as well. We're doing like some advanced teaming. So assembling a team of people to work on an incident rather than sending it to one person. And it would be based on what technologies were involved in that ticket. What you described is accurate.
And so the AI is providing, you know, much more of a rifle shot, more context around who should be involved, what we should focus on. On that roadmap, is there then the point where the AI gets smart enough where it can execute resolution? Do you see that? Is that something that...
Yeah, no, absolutely. And we were working on exactly that. So definitely part of what's gone on there. And the data science company we're working with, and I'll get to some of that later, was integrally involved in that. Like they were saying, here are your highest repeating issues and there's known fixes for this percentage of them. Let's just automate those resolutions, right? So absolutely part of it.
I mean, the efficiency part of this equation is huge, I think, for, you know, AI ops in terms of managing IT infrastructure, because this thing with customers in this world of infrastructure is, unlike our electric bills, which, you know, keep going up over time. I mean, people ultimately, they want, or companies want, the same for less or more for less, right? It seems to me that that is always the conversation that an MSP is in, right? Hey, our contract's coming back up. You did these 10 things for me. I want you to keep doing these 10 things for me, but tell me how you can do that more efficiently. Right? Or I want you to do 12 things for me. I want you to throw some more in at the same price. And so if you're not really chipping on the efficiency piece, as you know, because you were in that game a long time, that's a problem. And I think that AI is the game changer here for folks, because I just did an executive session yesterday on this topic, and I was showing them some use cases that we see right within the membership on how they're applying AI in different areas and what type of efficiencies they're seeing. And the thing that we're chipping on is we're saying, what happens in 3 years if other companies have all pursued these capabilities and successfully deployed them in multiple use cases and you have not, right? You just said, hey, we're not sure. We're going to wait. We're going to see what happens, dot, dot, dot. Your operating model is going to be so out of whack that it's not even funny. It's not even close. And so, again, this efficiency thing, I keep harping on it in this podcast. Keep harping on it, and every time I'm talking to a company, but I almost feel like the alarm bell isn't going off loud enough for enough companies. Yeah. So back to your use case, how long ago did you start that initiative?
That was probably around 2019. We started, you know, doing the initial research and putting use cases together and things like
that. Yeah. So in today's AI world, how things are moving so quickly, that's like literally ancient history, right? 2019. That is like way back. So when you started, were there any off-the-shelf tools that you could take advantage of, or were you pretty much developing on your own? I mean, how did you approach it?
Yeah, there were some off-the-shelf tools, and we did evaluate them. The key there was doing good proof of concepts, right? Because we had in mind what we wanted, and some of the tools were promising some things along those lines. But what we found out was there was a bit more marketing hype than value, and we weren't quite getting the results that we wanted from the off-the-shelf tools. So I think there's a bit of a danger where many of the vendors are needing to throw this tag in there. You know, it's AI capable or AI, but when you dig under the covers, it's not really true AI. It's kind of just rule-based computing, you know. I'll give you an example. One of the companies we looked at had a slider that you could slide to control how much noise you wanted versus accuracy, right? And that just was not a good compromise.
You want accuracy. You didn't want a slider. Is that what you're saying? You wanted it to be...
Yeah. Yeah. We wanted the system to take care of both elements of that, right? not to just kind of have these rules. What we ended up doing was going out and looking beyond the off-the-shelf and looking at data science companies that were specialized in our space. And so we found a, you know, kind of a boutique data science company with a bunch of PhDs. And I think this is the key with AI, is not kind of looking at what the technologies are out there and saying, hey, where can I apply that in my business? But looking through your business and seeing where do you need additional help? Where do you need benefit? And then seeing how you can apply AI into it and finding the right AI to put into it. So we found these guys who are specialists in the monitoring managed space with data lakes that could ingest huge volumes of signal. I mean, we had multi-millions of alarm signals coming in every day. So you can imagine the size of that data lake over time, right? It's enormous. And they would apply probably about 15 different algorithms to take care of things that would keep the latest data fresher than the older data, et cetera, et cetera. And all these different things to make it accurate. But the key there was guys who were really specialized in what we were trying to achieve with AI.
So you said a really important thing there in terms of looking for the use cases for AI within a business. And this is one of the patterns that we're looking for across successful use cases. When we talk to companies, what have you done? How'd you approach it? And one of the attributes that I'm seeing is that you go after workflows where you sort of have great line of sight to the efficiency KPIs, right? You look at a workflow where you say, look, it takes how long for an engineer to resolve a case, or it takes how long to do this. And we track it. We have really good data here. So we know what better would look like. And we think there could be an AI use case here. So you don't start out with sort of think AI might help out, but 3 months from now, 6 months from now, we don't really know what improved. You go after the places where you really do have some concrete KPIs, performance KPI you can look at in your point, and then apply off the shelf if that's not available. Let's look for other ways to apply true AI capabilities against our data, against our workflow. So I think that that's a good guidance. On the off-the-shelf, tools continue to mature, and some of them are, they're ready for prime time for certain use cases. I'm definitely hearing that, right? So literally vendors are now coming and say, hey, 2 years ago, you had to do a lot of customization, et cetera. Today, it's really, we're ready to just rock and roll. But I'm curious, because this muscle, this expertise of evaluating if an AI tool is going to, off-the-shelf, is going to meet your needs or not. I mean, that's a new skill set companies have to build, right? Because you probably have tons of people in your company that evaluate a traditional enterprise software tool or piece of hardware, like, hey, we're going to use a new router in our, you know, infrastructure, who looks at that? So what guidance would you give if a company was saying, gosh, we've never evaluated AI tools before? Who should be involved, in any insights on the types of questions people should be asking? How would you, you know, guide a company to start that journey?
Yeah, no, that's a great question. I think more than ever, it needs a multifaceted team. So this should not be an IT project. It should be the compute guys combined with really smart data scientists who understand the data and the data models, et cetera. And then subject matter experts who really understand the business side. So, you know, when those three elements can work together and do the proof of concept and know what kind of results they're after, then they can evaluate really well.
We have a fantastic analytics team here at TSIA, and they've been evaluating multiple tools for us to use in various different use cases for us, right? Whether it's on our portal, whether it's how our researchers are working with data, whether it's how we're creating content. And I'm just so thankful they're in play, because they can sniff out these tools. They can ask the right questions and sort of say, oh, that tool, it doesn't do X, or it's got this sort of hole in it or whatever. It's not traditional IT who's doing that. So in your experience, because you mentioned like the data sciences being involved, who's the closest to be able to kind of poke the technical holes in the AI tool and say, yeah, that's not going to get us where we need to go? Did you notice that when you were going through it, if there's any gravitational pull there in terms of who figured it out the soonest for you?
No, it's a great question, because some of the guys were bamboozled by slick UIs, right?
I'd be bamboozled. Yeah. I'd be like, hey, that looks great. Let's go for it.
And that's the big danger there. So I don't know if it was necessarily a function as much as having a team, right? It's more like almost a personality thing where people are somewhat skeptical And those are the guys you need to scratch a little bit because they're not bamboozled by the UI. They're like, wait a minute, let's take a look at the results here.
Again, I think that's great guidance for folks. And you're starting this evaluation process more than ever. Make sure it's cross-functional more than ever. Make sure that the subject matter experts who are going to be using the results of this are there as part of the conversation so they can be poking and say, wait a minute, all the skeptics should be at the table in a healthy way. And there's a balance here, I'm sure, because if you dial that into the too skeptical mode, you're going to have a lot of people with their arms crossed saying, yeah, this is just never going to work. And I'm sure you could have technical engineers going, I don't want to use these tools. I can hunt these cases down. That software is never going to figure it out. So you got to guard against that. But you want some healthy skepticism so that you aren't being bamboozled by slick UIs and underneath the covers, there's just not enough there. And unfortunately, there still is a lot of that going on in AI because the hype is high and there's a lot of people rushing out saying, I've got solutions that just aren't there yet. I mean, that's just the reality.
Some of these really good high-value data science companies, they're not good at marketing. They're not good at UIs. Right. So you have to do the opposite. You have to look past that stuff, the not very pretty interface, and look at what they can really provide and what their capabilities are. Because that's what we found is we had guys, who were just like, that's not a very good tool. Look at the interface and stuff. I'm like, but have you seen the results that it's pumping out? I mean, it's amazing.
Yeah. So if I played that back, I mean, I think the guidance here is that, if you're looking at an AI tool, off-the-shelf tool that has lots of sizzle, there may not be enough substance. And there are AI tools out there that have lots of substance, but they just don't have a lot of sizzle. Don't be turned off by that. Don't be turned off by the fact that,
Yeah. And one thing I'd add in there, Thomas, which I think is really critical for people to understand is that I wouldn't even think about some of these capabilities as a tool. Mm-hmm. I would think about it as a capability that can interface with your environment mm-hmm. and what you have running. So for example, if you're pumping tons of data somewhere, right? Mm-hmm. Let the data scientists do something magical with that data set and feedback results to you into your existing ecosystem in some way, right? That type of thing, I think, where the real value is. Yeah.
So, I mean, they're bringing to bear a new tool set, if you will, against that data. And they know how to tune that thing and make that data saying, like, hey, we can get this kind of insight, that kind of insight, et cetera. And I think the beautiful thing for tech companies, again, who have connected customers, and like by definition, a managed service provider has connected customers. You know what's going on with their products. You're getting telemetry from that. And that is gold now because you know, you can do things with that massive data as opposed to people that, again, you sell a piece of technology, the customer installs it, you have no idea what they're doing with it. You have no telemetry. You don't have the same advantage, right?
Insights. Yeah, absolutely.
So I'm curious, when you embarked on this project, and again, these things don't happen in weeks or months or quarters. It takes a little while to mature these. What were some of the surprises you had from where we started? You said, hey, I think we're going to do X. And then you started to get into it and it was like, well, this is maybe a little bit more of Y.
Yeah, no, it's a great question. I think the first one is what we mentioned earlier, the kind of marketing, the AI marketing on some of the off-the-shelf products.
Yeah.
Secondly, was the price of some of those. It was eye-watering and, margins still matter.
Mm-hmm. And do you think higher prices are driven by the fact that there wasn't a lot of capacity out there in the marketplace that they could charge higher prices because not a lot of people could do what they were doing?
They felt they had a differentiation. And then there were some that were massively complex. Like they would bring like 20 to 25 people to a call. Mm-hmm. The project was going to cost tens of millions over X number of years because it's so complex, That also we were skeptical of, and fortunately we didn't go that route. Mm-hmm. But yeah, that was surprising. I think probably the biggest thing that surprised me was the resistance to change, the adoption, the implementation was incredibly difficult. Mm-hmm. And probably the type of users we were dealing with as well, engineers, right? They get very set in their ways. They get comfortable. They feel like they have control over their world because it works like this. They know how it works. And suddenly all that gets upended and it works totally differently.
That comment does not surprise me because this, again, is a highly common thread I'm hearing in all of these use cases, is that the change, you cannot underestimate the change management component of deploying an AI capability. And I'm sure there's some people listening to this going, look, man, change management, it's been an issue forever, number one. Number two, we've been deploying software tools forever. And every time we deploy a software tool, it forces a change in workflow. And so there's really no new there. But what I would submit is that these are dramatic changes to workflows. You know, we had one piece of software. We've all been using software like, hey, we were using this CRM and now we're going to use this CRM. Fundamentally, you're still going to put an opportunity in. You're still going to, you know, blah, 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 blah. Okay, yeah. I got to learn different buttons to click or whatever. That's change management. That's hard. But we're talking about use cases where they are relying on technology to do things. This is my value add here. This is what I've been doing for years. And it took me years to get this smart to come up with this answer. And you're telling me, now this is just going to tell me the answer and I go from there. It's a big deal. And so I think companies have to commit to that change. And so on that thread, once you started to realize some of the challenges there, what were the tactics to kind of help people get through that knothole? How did you get people comfortable with the new workflows?
Let me tell you a quick little example story, if I may, and then I'll back to that last question. Earlier, I mentioned to you how you know, we would feed multiple alarms onto one incident now, and it used to be just one-to-one prior to that. But that's only half the story. The other half of the story is that that incident was now completely dynamic. So that five alarms might become seven alarms in a minute.
Oh, wow.
It might be nine alarms in another 2 minutes.
Yeah.
Right? So it's a completely dynamic environment. And this was just blowing people's minds. And some of the alarms might drop off and move to a different cluster. And so things are changing all the time. And the guys are just freaked out by this, right? This is just, how can I manage in this type of environment? That everything's changing. It's not fixed. Yeah, this is the new world. So I think that what we ended up doing to mitigate that was tons and tons of sessions explaining the value, explaining why, explaining what the benefits to the customer are, what's behind the scenes, answering lots of questions. Mm-hmm. And it helped, but man, it was still painful.
Yeah. Again, common threads here, everyone should understand. Change management is harder, I think, on these AI because they're re-engineering the workflow, like you were just describing, like big changes in the way they were interfacing with the technology. You have to be committed to that change management in terms of constant education of the why. I think a lot of it is the why. Yeah, why do I have to use this tool? There's value proposition reasons. There's efficiency reasons. I mean, we got to stay competitive. There's a lot of whys, but you have to keep reminding people that the status quo is not going to be okay. And I think part of the work that we're doing on that why is to provide the air cover for people like yourself that were in the process of implementing to say, look, why? Well, look at all these studies about how people are deploying AI and how dramatically it's changing operating models. Do you think we are going to be competitive 3 years from now if we're not doing that, right? So I think creating more air cover is important. And then ultimately, you think about a pool of employees, and it is that classic bell curve of life where I'm just curious if you saw anything different with this. There is a subset, let's say, you know, it's a 20% of the folks who say, hey, this is cool. This is interesting. I'm going to lean into it. I want to be AI adept. And so they're kind of on it. The opposite end is you got the 20% who are like, I don't want to do this. I'd rather go work somewhere else. This is not for me. And then you got the mass in the middle, right? It's that 60, whatever, the chunk in the middle that you're doing a lot of the why for. You want to get them to the knothole and they're savable. The 20% who have their arms crossed, probably they're now at the wrong company. They're really committed that they don't want to learn these tools. Did you experience the same thing roughly? Or
no, exactly. And I think one of the things that I would have done differently is I would have found that front end 20 and made them champions, right? Internally, I would have done that a lot sooner.
You leaned into them more.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. That's super interesting. I'm curious to get your perspective now since you started this, you know, several years ago. How do you feel, if we bring back the lens, how are AI capabilities in general changing the way the technology providers operate? What do you see there and envision there? We can just focus on the world of MSPs, but what do you think is going to be dramatically different there?
I'd say the biggest thing is that the world's going to be more dynamic, like the example I gave, right? And so in all areas of business, I think it's going to be dynamic. And the interesting thing about AI for me is that it's so different to technology shifts that we've seen in the past. Like with cloud, massive impact to business, but it's one understandable layer of technology, right? So it affects, you know, the tech world and finance operations and stuff like that, but it was very understandable, discrete. AI is not that. It's end to end. It impacts and can impact any and every part of the business, right? There's no exclusions. So from my perspective, it really takes kind of a business lens to look at the end-to-end value chain and see what makes sense to where do you want to start, prioritize and figure out from a business perspective. But yeah, I'd say the biggest thing is that all the functions have to embrace big changes. That's going to be toughest.
So broad-based impact, because there's lots and lots of use cases, so it's not isolated, and things move quickly, much more dynamic in terms of how people have to think about their workflows, maybe dynamically changing a lot, tools evolve, etc.
I would also say one of the big shifts and things to take advantage of is the insights. I think the insights that AI is capable of are phenomenal. If you have a decent data set and some history, and you can both look at the market and your customers and your transactions and your data and get insights that before were really tough to get. Like even with BI, you had to predefine kind of how you got those insights.
Yep.
We were doing stuff with Microsoft Power BI with our data scientists that were just phenomenal. I mean, the system would go and take the data set and go, hey, here's all these correlations I've found, and here's the most impactful one to your operation. Mm-hmm. I mean, that would have taken somebody months to figure out. And it's just, boom, it's just figuring it out. So those kind of insights are powerful and ready to be taken advantage of.
Yeah, you're on such a great example there, because, you know, I was listening to a podcast where they were describing how AI is massively changing how companies are developing new drugs for various diseases and challenges. And they were interviewing this gentleman who, you know, his PhD, he's been working in a lab, you know, all his life. And what he does is they put these different combinations together to try to address whatever challenge they're working on. And he said, you could go your entire career testing and you're using all your best knowledge and you're coming up with this string of bonds, whatever, and you're saying, okay, great, I'm going to test this. And he goes, you could go your entire career and never have a winning combination, never have a drug that ever proves to be effective. They are using AI on the front end of that, and it's sorting through tens of thousands of millions of combinations and coming down saying, okay, here's the top 10 you should try, right? This is what you should. And so what you just said, and I listened to that and I was thinking, that train is coming to the world of business, right? In terms of business decisions. Oh, like you said,
it's here.
Got this data and now it can give me all these insights. I could have put a team on it for 6 months working on it before they come up with one answer. And now I push a button and it says, here's like the top three things you should look at. It is mind blowing.
Yeah. And it's insights into so many aspects, right? Customer behavior, market, what kind of efficiency correlations you have in your operation that you can resolve. You know, everything is game. It's beautiful.
Yeah. Well, and you know, and you're on another great thread there, is we're watching AI capabilities unfold. We're seeing really interesting use cases on content development and management. We're seeing really, obviously, lots of great use cases in the world of support and operations. Very natural. We got a lot of data, telemetry, product you can work with there. The laggards we see right now are things like offer development, the revenue management side of it. And what you just said, I totally agree with, right? There will be a point where you can start looking and saying, hey, these types of customers, what are they most interested in? What kind of offers? What kind of pricing points? What kind of on and on and on. You're going to be able to iterate and come up with these winning combinations. You're going to get them isolated down and be able to A/B test them way faster and be way more accurate. So, I mean, it's super exciting and daunting at the same time. I do, though, have to hit on the hype side of it. This gap between hype and reality. Where do you see the biggest hype still right now surrounding AI? As you are scanning the industry and staying on top of this, where do you think there's still a gap between what people are saying and what you believe is true underneath the covers?
Yeah, I think in summary, Thomas, there's a Harvard Business Review quote that I love, and we use this as the kind of foundation of the way we approached AI. And the quote says that one of the biggest mistakes leaders make is to view AI as a plug-and-play technology with immediate returns.
Okay, yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So it's just not. I mean, it's one of those things. I kind of liken it to electricity, if you don't mind me just taking a little tangent here for a second.
Yeah.
If you can imagine a factory in the past, right, that was fully manual, people literally hammering stuff, sawing stuff manually, and suddenly electricity is invented, right? It boggles the mind. Like guys who get it would say, oh my gosh, where can I apply this? Mm-hmm. You know, I can automate, I can create a machine run on electricity that can do that task of 10 people, right? And other guys will go, oh, well, I guess I could turn the lights on for everybody. That'll be helpful. But it's the same type of thing, right?
Yeah.
It's like,
yeah,
you can either lean into this and understand the possibilities and go wild. And I think we're going to see a lot of that. Companies that get it, even if they're small, are going to just leapfrog. Others are going to, you know, be left just turning the lights on.
Well, and to jump on that observation, I was listening to another podcast. People can tell that is what I do in the morning when I'm working out, is I listen to podcasts. That's how I get through all those. I do double duty, man. They say that's, you know, multitask. Okay. So I was listening to one that I've been on that they focus on digital and AI, et cetera. And they interviewed this gentleman who specializes in deploying AI capabilities. And his observation was that it is these small and mid-sized companies that are being the most aggressive with what you just said, which is, oh, this AI thing, it's not about turning a light bulb on. It's about changing 10x the way my employees operate. And he says the larger companies are the ones that are slow rolling this. They're like, I don't know, that's a lot of change to workflow, and I don't know if I really need to do this. So they're much more of the, maybe I could turn some lights on, you know? And so I think that is going to be interesting to see over the next 3 to 5 years, because you could see some, you know, mid-sized companies that are maybe, you know, going against bigger competitors suddenly start coming to the table of customers with, again, completely different price points, completely different value propositions, because they really leaned into this. And it's going to make their much larger competitors look like a freaking Model T. That could happen quick.
I absolutely agree. Yeah, no, I completely agree with that. You know, being in the large corporate environment, I understand it's not necessarily that there aren't people that don't get it.
Yeah.
Those companies always have some really smart people.
Of course.
It's just that much harder to get it done.
Right.
You know, you have to navigate through so many layers and people don't get it and budgets, and they're just not nimble.
Yeah. It's an example where size is a disadvantage when you're trying to transform workflow in the way you're operating. That is, I think, classically where size is a disadvantage. So yeah, it's going to be, it's going to be fascinating to see how this all plays out. You know, I have one last question before you. I was looking at your background. You came into tech about the same time I did, which is early 1990s, and you were implementing ERP solutions. And so I'm curious, what is the biggest change you've seen now in terms of implementing technology solutions? When you started doing this ERP 20 years ago and now, just how would you describe the biggest differences there?
Yeah, it's a fascinating question and fun to reflect on, you know, once you've been in the business for a while. What pops to mind for me is the Agile Scrum methodology. I don't know, it sounds out there.
Versus the old waterfall.
If you think about 20 years ago, the way we used to implement solutions and the way we do it now. And I think it's laid the groundwork for everything we're saying, right? This AI is so dynamic and can affect so many different areas. Without having that type of methodology to implement, it's not going to happen. And there's a double edge to that, though. And I've seen people use the Agile as a way to not have a plan. they're so addicted to quick wins, you know. Oh, we're doing Agile. This is Agile. We're turning on a dime. But it doesn't fit into any strategy. It doesn't fit. Yeah. It doesn't integrate with other stuff. It's not part of a bigger purpose. And I think there's a danger there, you know, they kind of kick the planning can down the road.
Yeah. It's funny that you say that is the biggest change that you've witnessed, because my cousin, he's a little bit older than me, he started his career at EDS. Remember EDS? Before they were bought by HP. As a project manager programmer and large bank systems, you know, the classic COBOL, the old classic IT. And he has been in this industry, you know, all these years, and he has done mostly project program management, waterfall, the classic EDS way. He's been to a bunch of different companies, and he was talking to my son, who's a programmer, right, or a software engineer. And they're sitting there talking about their weekly scrums, both of them, right? And so they're separated by a complete generation in this industry. When I heard them both talking the same language on Agile and Scrum, I'm like, yep, that is where the world has gone. That is the way of doing business now, for sure, compared to what it was when they started. Yeah, it really struck me.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Couldn't agree more. And I think the other quick comment, Thomas, is that more than ever, I think AI brings heat to fundamentals. What I mean by that is, like, if your business doesn't have good strategy, good culture, all those kind of basic business fundamentals, AI is going to struggle, right? You can't just turn it on and fix things.
Yeah.
And the same with all the technology fundamentals that you guys have been preaching for years, right? If your data isn't good, if you haven't got all those other technology fundamentals in place, it's going to be tough to get good advantage.
Yeah, it's going to be the moment of truth for a lot of tech providers in these next couple of years. It is going to be a moment of truth, because if you've been sort of underinvesting in some of these critical infrastructure capabilities and saying, well, you know, that's a Mignotta strategy, it's definitely going to bite you right now. There's just no
doubt about it. Completely agree
about it.
Yeah.
Well, hey, I really appreciate you coming in here, Justin. It was a great conversation, sharing your battle scars on this. I think people are going to take a lot out of it. And I always like to end with the question of the day. So my question for the audience here is, do you have the following line item on your resume? I have successfully been involved in the deployment of AI capabilities within my company. If that is not on your resume today, when will it be? Cheers.